Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So yesterday, by the way, I'm going to get into hoops in just a second, but yesterday I asked you, you had talked about Sinners at one point before you saw it, and now you've seen it, and you gave me a little bit of the review about Sinners. I also happen to know that you've, since we talked off the air, about that you've been to Barksdale's, the reconstituted, reinvented Barksdale's restaurant. What'd you think?
Yeah, I was sort of a semi-regular at Barksdale's back in the day. Maybe not a regular, but a frequent visitor, mostly for breakfast. I've gone a couple times since it's reopened, both for breakfast and for lunch, which I didn't used to do before. I'm really happy with the way that what they've done with it. It's Bryant Bain and his wife and his business partner, whose name I can't remember, who do, you know, Bain Barbecue there and Cooper Young. And I think they've updated it just enough, but not too much. And so it still has the same, it's cleaner. It still has the same, the same atmosphere, the same feel. They updated the menu a little bit, little tweaks here and there. I think there's some stuff that's a little bit more from scratch, maybe even than it was before. But they kept the vibe. They've kept the general approach to sort of, you know, just your basic, you know, straightforward Southern food, both breakfast and lunch. And I'm a fan of those kind of places. You know, I feel like they're a dying breed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm real happy with the way they've updated it and kept it going.
All right. Onward to hoops. Knicks get the win over Detroit. Jalen Brunson with the crossover created roughly 72 feet of space. It was really quite something. But we were talking earlier, like, I'm going to go ahead and presume the Knicks are going to probably lose to the Celtics. They lost every game in the regular season, their series. And I think only one of them was close. And this is something you talk about, is when is good good enough? Like, it's hard to be a championship team. If you are a Knicks fan and that's your fate, you lose in 5 games to the Celtics here. Like, how would you think about it?
I don't know, man. Do people like watching basketball?
Right. That was fun last night, right? Yeah.
That game was fun last night. If I'm a Pistons fan, I thought that series was great.
Right.
I wish I won it, but it's great to be in competitive basketball games in the playoffs, and like, people are yelling and screaming and players are going for it. And like, it's great. And like, at some point, only one team is going to win the last game and hold up a trophy. And there's 29 other teams, right? And so if it's you're miserable, if your team's not holding up to the trophy, I just think that's stupid. And so, no, this is a good era for the Knicks. It may end up coming up short in the sense of winning a title, and that'll be disappointing. But Knicks fans will always look back and love, like, the Brunson years, and they'll think that was great. That was a great time.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And then we had the Clippers. Even the series with Denver, you had picked the Clippers in this series. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I didn't see that one because I was too sleepy. I went to bed after the Knicks Pistons game, so I'm not really sure how that went about. But I think the Clippers are the better team. Now, the Clippers are the better team that might lose the series, and sometimes that happens. But I thought them winning that game and getting it to 7 was, you know, it was good because we get a game seven, which we're not going to get a lot of. And I do think that the Clippers have a better chance to push the Thunder in the second round, even though they don't have Nikola Jokic, just because of their depth and their defense and their multiple ball handlers they can sort of operate with on the perimeter. But I'll be interested to see what happens. Like, I think the Clippers are a little bit better, but not a lot better. And, like, the game 7 is going to happen in Denver.
Yeah. We could get a game seven if the Rockets can go ahead and knock off the Warriors, but that'll be tough. That one's in Golden State, game six. One of the things that did happen in the Clippers-Denver game is Tyronn Lue made a change and put Batum in the second half rather than Ryan Dunn to sort of stretch the floor a little bit, create a little more space, and he was terrific.
Chris Dunn.
Chris Dunn, yes. And it reminded me, I mean, it made me think, he's not exactly a gritty veteran player, but he is a useful veteran player, right? Like, those guys having useful, but weren't the Grizzlies at some point in the Batum sweepstakes at some various whatever that they were looking a long time ago?
I don't know if there was a sweepstakes, for Batum. I don't know if Ed McMahon ever came to your door and said, congratulations, you get Nicholas Batum. But he was a free agent the same summer as Chandler Parsons.
That was it, yeah.
And he was one of the names being discussed. Is this a guy you could maybe go after? But everyone thought he was going to re-up and stay in Charlotte, which he did back then. That's right. Real ancient history. You know, Batum is exactly the kind of, I was actually looking at this this morning, last night at some point, thinking about this. Maybe I'll write about it at some point during the playoffs. And I mean, I've written before that the Grizzlies should try to add some veterans, you know, in the back end of their roster. And like, you know, not every roster spot has to be filled by like a guy who just came off a two-way or a guy who's a second round pick or whatever. Like, you know, take a shot on, you know, the Nicholas Batums of the world, right? The veteran guys who are going to make it $3 or $4 million, whatever. And if you look around on the teams that are in the playoffs and teams that are having success in the playoffs, there are a handful of guys like that. And the Clippers have a couple of them. Those two guys you mentioned, Nicholas Batum and Chris Dunn, are sort of those kind of guys. There actually aren't a lot of guys like that in rotations on playoff teams. And if you really look closely, there are a lot of guys like that not in rotations on playoff teams. And so, like, you sign that guy, maybe you get Nicholas Batum, or maybe you get Dario Saric, who's making $5 million to not play for the Nuggets because he's not good enough, right?
Right.
And it is dicey. It's great when you hit on a guy like that. You've got a true veteran on a cheap contract who's playing for you. A lot of times you sign those guys and they're just not good enough.
Interesting. All right. Okay. John Hollander did his summary of the Grizzlies, his sort of roundup of the Grizzlies. And the truth of the matter is that if you read you and Drew, and if you listen to this show, you on the show, not a lot here is new, but it's a good summary and an interesting. He went out and got some perspectives from executives and granted them anonymity to talk about the Grizzlies. And a lot of the thing, again, pretty much everything, right down to the comparison with the Cavs and whatever, is stuff we have talked about. But interesting nonetheless. So one of the things that in terms of why the Grizzlies haven't been...
I've not seen this, by the way. I did talk to John. John was in town for the series, and I talked to him. We went out and got coffee and stuff. So I talked to him about the story he was writing, but I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Well, he basically said, why haven't they been able to go from good to great? And first he says, that's hard. You know, lots of teams are good and don't go to great. And he talked to execs, and there were four fundamental reasons. One is Ja Morant. You're building around a guy who it's impossible to build around, basically. I mean, they were pretty tough on Ja Morant. Second was Desmond Bane makes too much money for what he does. Third was you took a big swing at Marcus Smart and missed. And fourth was the bench. The bench that used to be, we've talked about extensively, and the bench that is now. The pieces that they've, you know, some hope for Scottie Pippen and whatever else. But if you look at the bench from 3 years ago and what they had, basically those were the four sort of areas. But leading with some pretty tough language from the execs about Ja, and at one point he says, this is John writing, ultimately, it's hard to see the Grizzlies vaulting into true contention until the best player on the team is somebody other than Morant. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think that I haven't read the piece, so maybe there's some wider context.
There's a lot of wider,
runs counter to what I'm about to say, but to me, that presupposes that Morant can't be the Morant he was 3 years ago. And to me, that's the question. I don't assume that he will, but I do think he can. And so I just don't know. The odds of getting the Morant you got 3 years ago, who was seventh in the MVP vote and second team All-NBA, versus the odds of the player you trade Morant for being that level of player, right? Which has better odds? You just tell me the odds for both are sub 50%, and you're just sort of stuck with it. And that might be true, but what are the better odds? That Morant becomes that level of player, or that the player you trade Morant for becomes that level of player?
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. I'll be honest, like the way they, this is the first. By far, Morant was the biggest lightning rod for execs, explaining why Memphis hadn't taken another step forward. In their view, Morant's lack of dependability for health, for shooting, for defense, for leadership, for avoiding entirely avoidable suspensions makes it impossible to build a team around him. They kind of have gone to the, yeah, this ship has sailed a little bit. Like it's not, but I think you're exactly right. What's the alternative? Is the alternative the player? Right. So.
And I don't think you're in a spot where you want to blow it up and say, this didn't work, we're starting over. I don't think anyone wants that.
Right.
I don't think fans want that. I don't think the organization wants that. I don't think anybody wants that.
What do you think of the idea that Desmond Bain makes too much money for what he does and therefore is of very little value in the trade market, which is basically what the execs are saying as well because of that?
I mean, that's a little stronger than I would say, the very little value, but I mean, I've already written
right
basically that,
right, exactly.
That he is a high paid version. He's a high end version of a low value player type, meaning he is the single position scoring guard who is not good enough on the ball to be the hub of your offense. And so those kind of players, if you're just talking about player, you know, positional types and what is in a general sense, your most important types, like, The ball dominant creator who's the hub for your offense is probably number one. The versatile defender who can front court defender who can like anchor a defense and give you value on both ends of the floor is like number two. Well, that's John Morant and Jaren Jackson. And Desmond Bane is the secondary scorer you can't run things through, at least, you know, at a high level. I mean, that is the kind of player who is less valuable when you have that player in a pretty big contract. And so I mean, I think they could trade Desmond Bane easily, but I don't know. It's sort of the same with Morant at a different level. It's like, can you trade him for the same value that he provides? You know?
Yeah. Again, almost everything in here is things we've discussed. So like literally there's nothing. It's just it's nice. It's interesting to see it from another perspective, and it's a nice, you know, package. But there's a couple things I wanted you to weigh on, apart from the four things that he identified. One is, and I know this is something you talked about, but he basically said part of the reason the Grizzlies took a step back this year was intentional. Trading Smart for cap space at midseason was a smart way to maximize the team next year and beyond, but it came at cost to the 24-25 team. Obviously, the judgment lying not too far.
Let me stop you, though. That is debatable, right? Was Marcus Smart going to help them or not? I mean, I don't think they believed that Smart was going to help them. So I don't think they thought they were subtracting from the team to do that.
Well, that gets to let me finish the sentence here. Obviously, the judgment lying not too far beneath the surface was that the current team wasn't quite good enough to contend. Do you think that was their approach at the trade deadline?
I think if you gave him truth serum, yes, I think that's part of the equation. But again, the team's not quite good enough to contend, and so we'll sacrifice the help Marcus Smart would provide.
I see.
I didn't think Marcus Smart was providing help.
I see.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. Then the part that this is where Jason and I both, we glazed over, because they got into the salary. He got into the, about going forward, he got into the salary cap stuff with Jaren. And so I need you to help me explain to understand this. He said, assuming he gets to be all NBA, it's by far the better of the two scenarios. And then he says, basically, Memphis would have four open roster spots and $48 million below the apron, allowing access to its full non-taxpayer mid-level exception, and could either sign Aldama or Kennard or impactfully inject itself into several trade scenarios, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, using Marvin Bagley, whatever. But that's sort of, in other words, this suggests that if you sign Jaren for all this money, there's still plenty of ways to get better in addition to that. Is that right?
For this year. And so this is the thing. I mean, you got to think about what if you're signing players to multi-year contracts, how that impacts when the new Jaren deal kicks in. And so if you sign Jaren, if Jaren makes All-NBA and you sign him to an extension that's somehow based on the All-NBA designation, that will not change his contract for this coming season, which is 23.4. So that money will start the next year. And so in terms of what you're doing this summer to build your team for next season, you have Jaren on $23.4 million.
The new extension
won't have started yet. And at that point, and again, it's depending on lots of other things, but to simplify at that point, I think you could access the full mid-level, which is what he's using longer language for that.
Yeah.
which I think could be an important tool to help the team. But if Jaren does not make all NBA and you still and you pursue an extension now, that's going to be the renegotiate and extend, which is going to mean you're going to try to up his contract this season.
I see.
His contract for this season, you're going to close off some of those other pathways.
I see. Then you've got to be renouncing Kennard and Bagley and whatever else, and you've got to be clearing money for this year. So it's sort of the idea that you can give Jaren the most money also creates the most flexibility or more flexibility to improve the team for this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at the cost of a bigger contract long term and whatever the long term ramifications of that are.
I see. Well, there you go. That piece is up at the Daily at the Athletic. People can read it there. Again, it's much of the same stuff that Chris has gone into, gone over extensively going forward. It is. It's just like there are so many teams that have been good and struggled to get to great. I was thinking about that old Portland team that the Grizzlies beat, the Dame Lillard, LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, that team. I don't know what they once dreamt of, but they didn't achieve it, did they? What's the best that team ever did? Finals?
I think they got to a conference finals and got swept, much like the Grand Grizzlies did. I can't remember. I think maybe against the Warriors they got to a conference finals and got swept. But my thing with, I'm just not even, and maybe this is defeatist right. or whatever, but I'm saying I don't think about it in terms of a championship. I think about it in terms of like they've won one playoff series. Let's win some more playoff series.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like the other era won four playoff series. Like this era has won one. Let's win some more.
Win some more playoffs.
That's what my attitude would be.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Did you understand that before, George, or do you understand it now?
I understand it a lot better now.
That's one of the great things about having Chris on. I understand it a lot better now. And I even read the words from John, and now I understand it much better now. So there you go.
The value of having someone smarter than
there us. Are. It is a big summer. There are decisions to be made. All right. If you're thinking about getting engaged, you don't have a lot of decisions. You just have one. Here, I'll help you. Go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. That would be the decision that I would recommend because Robert Irwin Jewelers, Howie, is absolutely passionate about diamond rings. They've got a large collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. I'll be honest, when I went in and I got some diamond earrings recently,